Hey, what's up, guys? We are back. We are officially right now recording our interview with Alex Sieber, a Hungarian-born American citizen. You weren't born in Hungary, but you're from Hungary. You're like a second generation.
Second generation in the U.S.
All right. So he got the opportunity to play in the 2018 World Championship Games over in Israel with Team Hungary, and we're just going to sit down and talk about his experiences, talk about some stories for the next 30 minutes to an hour and hear what it's like. Alex, it's good to have you on.
Thanks for having me, Austin.
Alex, the first thing that I want to ask you about, and we're going to give a shout out here on our Instagram account, probably the most famously active lacrosse social media account right now is the Fighting Pastries from, I mean, they're the Danish national team.
Yeah, the Danish.
So they said on our Instagram account that you needed to shout them out. Did you get to play against them? Did you get to interact with them, experience them? What was that like?
We had some experience with them during the closing ceremony, the last game. My team got kicked out of the closing ceremony. They told us to sit back down. They can't kick us all out. So
it was the Fighting Pastry team? It was the Fighting Pastry team that said to sit back down. They can't kick us all out.
Yeah, it was the Fighting Pastry team.
So did you get to, like, play against them? Did you have any other interaction with them besides that? Did you get to watch them at all? Like, anything you could tell us about the team that's kind of blowing up on Twitter and Instagram? He's checking his notes. He's got a notepad right now. But, no, this is just our shout-out to the Fighting Pastries. You guys are awesome. Keep killing it. We love that. We love that you follow us here at Everything Lacrosse. We love that you we love what you're doing for the game. You guys are definitely following along with the mission of Grow the Game that Lacrosse All-Stars has put out, and it's super awesome to see you guys thrive, and I hope you all are doing well. Alex, did you get to experience them a little bit more?
We watched them scrimmage during the week where everyone was practicing. We watched them scrimmage, and we scrimmaged Puerto Rico and Colombia, but that was all I got to see from them.
How were they skill-wise? How were they, like, talent-wise? What was it like watching them?
They're pretty good. They have They have really good stick skills, they could pass and catch and everything. So
that's all it takes.
They got some shooters.
Yeah, man, that's all it takes.
They're Fighting Pastries, I mean.
The Fighting Pastries. Shout out to the Fighting Pastries. We love you guys. Keep doing your thing. Alex, so what a lot of people may not know that may be tuning in this podcast is that we are college teammates. That's how we said we had the opportunity to sit down with Alex, kind of like you're just passing through. But no, I see you every day at classes.
Yeah.
We have practice together. But I remember last year at a point you said that you were eligible to play for the games because we talked about me having family from Poland. I'm a generation away. Like, I'm a generation away from being eligible to play for them. And you said that you were eligible. And I was like, that's insane. Are you going to go play in the World Games? And you said no. And I kind of want to know, like, just kind of the backstory of how that all changed. Was it like a parent thing, and then all of a sudden they were like, "Oh yeah, now you can go"? Did they like, I don't know, just what changed from you saying no, I'm not going to go, to all of a sudden you're in Israel, killing it at the World Games?
It was definitely a parent thing. My mom was kind of scared to send me over to Israel.
Yeah,
but I decided to go there because it's a pretty big dream of mine to compete at that level. And showing pride for my country, that, like, where my heritage is from. And so I got the opportunity to go. And my dad was really proud. My mom was really proud. My whole family was pretty proud, especially my grandpa. He still lives over there in Hungary. He lives in Sopron. And it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool getting to go over there. I know that some people don't really get that experience, so it's pretty crazy.
No, that's awesome to hear. I was excited to be able to watch you play as one of my teammates, as just not only as one of my teammates. That was super awesome to watch you play and see the growth in your game from last spring to the World Games. But I think it was also just cool in general that I could watch the Hungarian national team play. Like, just as a purely lacrosse, like, base fan, we're usually watching Johns Hopkins versus Syracuse. We're watching Maryland versus, like, North Carolina, and those are the only games we get to watch. But for this whole tournament, through, like, ESPN Plus and through, like, links on Twitter and stuff, we could watch Hungary play, like, the Hungary play Ireland. You know what I mean? It wasn't just U.S. versus Canada, U.S. versus Iroquois. It was the opportunity to watch you guys play. And so that was awesome for all of us, and I was super excited for that, and that's awesome to hear. Alex, one thing I want to go into, we'll kind of talk about the lacrosse field aspect of it right now, like your skills and where you grew and like what was your favorite game and stuff like that. And then I want to get into kind of like your experiences around like going to Jerusalem and stuff like that. But I think we'll start with the lacrosse field. What was like kind of your goal? I don't want to say that you guys thought you were going to win the whole thing, but I don't want to bash you guys and be like, everybody knew Team Hungary wasn't winning the championship. So I'm trying to like be politically correct here. What was the team's goal going into the games like these when you know like you're not even in the blue group? So like, are you just trying to succeed? Like, what's success for you guys? What did you guys see as success?
Well, it was our first year showing out, so we were just trying to get a positive record at least.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up coming out 28th in the world out of 46 teams. There was supposed to be 48, but two teams dropped out. Yeah, our record was 4-4, so we were pretty happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
We played some pretty tough teams. We played Sweden twice. We lost both times. And then mm-hmm. we played Hong Kong. We lost them. But their program has been around for 26 years.
Mm-hmm.
Ours has been around since, I think, 2013 or 14. So, but, yeah, we were pretty thrilled with our, with how we came out of the tournament. And hopefully we'll see better results in the future too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, we talked earlier before this podcast. Did you say that you had to be in like the top 30 to get an automatic like qualification in the next tournament? Are you guys qualified to be in the these were 2018, so in the 2022 games, are you guys qualified to be there?
I don't know if that was a rumor for just the top 30 teams, but I was hearing that it had to be top 30 to go to Canada for the next World Games. So if that is true, then we did make top 30 is 28. So I guess we will be qualified for the next games.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. So I want to kind of get into like you as a player. So we play together. You're a super quick midi. When you want to turn on the jets, you're one of the best players on the field. What was kind of your goal going against all of a sudden? So you were a freshman in college last year. So not only the big change of I'm playing high school seniors and like juniors, to switching to one of the best conferences in Division II, the GMAC, with teams like Seton Hill, Mercer, Lake Erie. So that's a bump up. And then all of a sudden, a few months after going against like Greg Whale, who just, I think that's how you pronounce his last name. There's a defender from Mercyhurst. His name is Greg. His last name, I think, is Whale, spelled W-E-Y-L. So we played against him. He got drafted by the Florida Launch. And then all of a sudden, not only is that a big step, then all of a sudden you're going up and you're playing internationally, like in a different country. So what was kind of your goal at the start of the year, maybe before your college career even started, and then going into these international games, where did you want to see improvement, like yourself as a player? Did you want to work more on your left hand? Did you want your cardio to improve? Like, talk about that, and then talk about whether you met that goal or not.
So this might sound weird, but I'm really indecisive usually on the field. And so doing all this, I gain a lot of confidence. And while I'm gaining my confidence to play on the field and make decisions really fast, I'm also like gaining my stick skills and like know how to dodge and when to dodge and what is open after I'm dodging and when to shoot mm-hmm. and how to place it. Like, it's all coming together with the confidence. So as my confidence is building up on the field, so are my skills, like with my stick.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as I keep playing with things that I know are like really big, like it just boosts my ego or confidence.
So you like to play like with, you like to play challenge, like you like to be challenged.
Yeah, I like to play pretty challenged. Sometimes I wouldn't say the best, but like I would like to play against people that I know are really good. Because mm-hmm. when you're playing against people that are really good, even though if you're getting like killed, you're mm-hmm. still like, you're still getting better. It's bettering you.
Yeah. No, that's kind of like that age old saying of like the little brother versus the big brother. And the big brother is like, I'm not going to take it easy on you because you're not going to get better. And so if the little brother just plays like bad people, we'll go in my life personally. Like, I was a big high school basketball player, grew up in like a basketball family. And my older brother was really good, scored 1,000 points in high school. And I would play one-on-one versus him. And he wouldn't let me score. I don't think I scored on him until I was like 13 years old. We probably started playing when I was around like 7 or 8. And so I didn't even, like, he would just block me to, like, half court, and then he would just run me over and, like, drive and make a layup. And he goes, like, believe it or not, like, you're getting better by playing me and losing than, like, if you're playing against your friends and just beating them up. You know what I mean? So, like, it's kind of like what you're saying. Like, you rise to the occasion because you know if you could play with these guys, you could play with anybody. And so I want to – that you know, that's just a really good point. So what kind of – what was the most memorable on-field experience that you have? Like, what was the game you remember most? What was the moment you remember most? Whether it was like sticking a corner. I saw on Twitter there's a highlight where you like where you yard sale the guy with a wraparound check. So like, what? I guess it's kind of two questions because I want to hear both, and I hope they're kind of not answered the same. What do you remember most, like on the field? Maybe it's just that check. And then what was your favorite game that you played and why? So kind of two questions there.
My favorite moment on the field was our second time playing against Sweden, and I'm not a big person to dodge behind X, but I went behind X, I made a move, there was a perfect window, like at the perfect time, and I decided to throw it, which is really different for me because I'm super indecisive with these decisions, and it went straight into the Jason Stick, number 15 on my team, and He quick sticked it right into the goal top left, and we scored, and that was the first point on the board for Hungary in the second game against Sweden. And then my favorite game that I remember is Hungary versus Russia. We beat them by one. That was a really big game because that's like, it's like I would say it's a really big
political rivalry. Like
I wouldn't know if it would be political, but we could say that political rivalry. I guess we could say that, yeah. But, yeah, my grandpa was really happy when we told him that we beat him. He was cheering for us. He was watching us. He's 96 or 97, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, he's pretty old.
But and he lives in Hungary, you said.
Yeah, he lives in Sopron, Hungary. And he was pretty excited. Yeah, my dad told him, and they were both cheering. They were all both watching at the same time.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
So was that just your favorite game because you won, or were there, like, specific moments where you're like, wow, this is, like, kind of, like, what my dream for lacrosse is? Like, you know what I mean? Like, there are some times where you'll score a big goal or, like, you'll have a big assist, and you'll be like, this is my favorite game for this reason. Was it just the fact that you won, or, like, was it a back-and-forth game? Take us through kind of that game with Russia.
It was really a back-and-forth game. We were answering. It was – each goal by each team was getting answered over and over again until we held possession during the last couple of minutes and we scored and we won the game. We took the game. And it's pretty big because we were fighting the whole time. We didn't give up. And we only had a certain amount of players. And their team was like, their team had a full bench for subs and everything. So once we beat them, you know, like the movie Miracle on Ice and stuff.
Yeah.
It was kind of like that.
Yeah, no, I. It's funny that you mentioned Miragon Ice. That's just, I guess, everybody wants to beat the Russians. I guess,
yeah.
I guess that's the goal in whatever sport you play. Alex, what was kind of your role on Team Hungary this year? Because I saw that you're playing a little bit of defensive midfield. You said you dodged from X. So as when we play in college together, you're an offensive midfielder, I would say. What was it like? And what was kind of your job description playing with Team Hungary with, you know, guys who may have been the same age as you? I haven't looked at your roster really, so I don't know. There may have been high school age guys or maybe been some college age guys, and there may have been some guys in like their 30s and 40s. So what was kind of – talk about the team dynamic a little bit and where you fit in all of that.
We have guys actually from all around, like all different ages. So it was pretty interesting playing with everyone. But it was really cool and good experience at the same time. My role on the team, I would say, would be to possess the ball, like be smart with it and just make the right plays. Don't push anything. Don't like take shots that you don't need to take, which is really good for me because that's when I learned when to shoot the ball and like when to pass it or who to pass it to and like what to look for. So it's pretty good for me. And I learned from that. So it was yeah, it was a really good learning experience for that part. But I would usually be possessing the ball or trying to feed it to whoever was open so that we could score and get points, either on an assist or a goal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just took every smart opportunity that I could. I did not force any dumb opportunities. If I knew that, if I had the slightest feeling that it wouldn't like happen, I would try not to do it so I wouldn't cause a turnover. It was a pretty big game to like lose turnovers. We were trying to keep a positive record, so turned out good.
All right, I think you're not the type of person that likes to brag, like at all. You don't like to talk about yourself, which is a good thing. Like, kudos to you for that. But we're gonna talk about you for a second. What was your, and I know you must know, because if you play in like the World Championships, you must know how many goals and how many assists you had. Like, do you know your stat line?
I didn't have a lot though.
Can you? No, that's okay. Just go into like what were your stats for the whole games, and like if you scored a goal. If you score multiple goals, which one was your favorite? Which ones you remember? Stuff like that. Just go into kind of. Let's talk about your stats for this tournament.
I did not score multiple goals. I scored one, but
so that's your favorite, which is awesome.
That is my favorite. I did have two assists, and I don't even know how many ground balls, because I would be picking them up off the wings for the faceoffs a lot, and bringing them down to get the possession, or I'd be getting them off the ground balls from turnovers. From down playing defense, but that's basically my. I don't have a lot of stats.
Who'd you score against, and kind of take us through the play?
I scored against Sweden. I was, instead of me dodging behind X for the assist that time, one of my other teammates did it, and I was in the perfect window for it, and he did the same thing that I did the first time, and passed it to me, and I just placed it perfectly bottom left, and it just. When it was the ugliest shot I have ever taken.
Why was it ugly?
I was falling at the same time that I was shooting the ball, so it was really bad. But it still went in because I placed it pretty good. So,
what does it feel like to score on a stage like that? Like, take us through that.
It was scoring on a stage like that is pretty crazy because you know you just like accomplished something when you're scoring against pretty much people that are like representing a whole country. It's something way bigger than yourself. It's crazy. It like pumps my adrenaline. It like does everything. It gets me really hype. It's indescribable, to be honest. It's like crazy.
Yeah, I think one of the things you noted was a good segue into my next question, and probably my last question about playing, and then we'll get into more of your traveling experiences, what that was like. But you talked about people playing for a whole country, about it being bigger than yourself. There are people, I'm sure everyone who plays lacrosse wants to play, you know, for their country and play on that stage. There are people like me who will never get that opportunity. I was born in the United States, and I'm average at best. So I can guarantee everyone listening to this podcast, I will not be playing for Team USA ever. And I'm a few generations away from playing for Team Poland. And so I don't think that opportunity will ever come to fruition. So what is it like? You hear people all the time when they do interviews being like, there's nothing like putting on the colors of your country and like wearing that across your chest. And I, as much as that would probably be my answer too, if somebody was interviewing me, because I have you sitting here and you've had that experience, I want to see if you can give us like a little bit more than that for people who may never get to experience that, or for people who may be listening to this and then in 2022 get the chance to play for their country. Because obviously I see this tournament expanding and including more countries, which means more new players. If all you can say is, it's exactly like that. There's nothing like playing, in your case, like, and having the green, red, and white, like, on your jersey. There's nothing like that. If that's all you can say, that's fine. But if you can give us a little bit more, just because I really want to know what it's like to, we listen to the national anthem before our games, but we're playing for our college. We're not playing for our country. I can't imagine hearing the national anthem of your country while wearing that uniform about to play for your country. So kind of, if you can give us some more, let's see what we get here.
So for wearing my country's colors and listening to the national anthem, first off, I listen to the national anthem, and the first thing that happens is, honestly, I get chills. Like, I start getting goosebumps in my arms. And then I start thinking of my whole family that lives there. Think about all my cousins, think about my grandpa, think about my grandma. And I think about all the places I've been in the country. And at the end of the song, I'm filled with pride. Like, I'm ready to go. It's got me really excited, ready to play. wearing my country's colors, I was excited to show. Like, I wasn't not trying to show anybody. I was trying to, like, show everyone I could.
Mm-hmm.
Like, look at me. I'm doing something big.
Yeah.
I was really excited. I called up my grandpa, and I showed him my uniform, and I've never seen him, like, smile so much.
Mm-hmm.
He was super proud of me. That was awesome. So I put my grandpa's initials on my helmet while mm-hmm. I was playing. And his name is Laszlo Sebor.
He's a pretty cool name. That's a pretty cool name, I'm not going to lie.
He's pretty sick. He's awesome. My dad is my dad's Hungarian name is Sándor Sebor.
You got a cool family names. Like you're
Thank you. Thank
you got some cool names.
Thank you. Yeah, but I literally was thinking of them the whole time as I was playing. And everything I did, like, even the worst things, like, big things and bad things, I literally thought as soon as I was done doing it, I was like, wow, my grandpa just saw that. Or my dad just saw that. Or, like, my whole family basically just saw that on TV.
Or lacrosse fans in general saw that. Like, you were playing on TV.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. It was weird knowing that people were, like, watching me from afar, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
From across the world, I guess.
Yeah.
But it was knowing that is pretty cool.
That's awesome. That's exactly the kind of answer we were looking for. That's awesome. One of the cool things I think about this tournament was the fact that you were in Jerusalem, you know, the holy city, all the history that's around, just, you know, Christianity and we've had this conversation multiple times, the other religions that are a part of that. So I just want to really get into what was it like? I know every single team had the opportunity to go into Jerusalem to tour that, and the games were being played in Israel, so that's not exactly Jerusalem. So, but even Israel is historic, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of want to get into what it was like touring Jerusalem, playing with like the Israel like backdrop. Just kind of take us through your travel experiences and some cool things. I know we've had multiple conversations which led to this podcast about you going into like some temples and stuff like that and seeing historic sites from like the Bible and from other religions. So I would love to just hear you talk about your travel experiences and what were some of the cool aspects about that.
So we started off going to Jerusalem by standing on top of Mount Olive, which is a mountain outside of Jerusalem. So you can look down on the city. Down on the mountain is a whole bunch of tombs, or it's like a graveyard. And everyone gets buried there that believes in Jesus, believes in God, my bad. Because the graveyard is Jewish. It's a Jewish religious belief graveyard. I don't know how to word that. But then we went into the city of Jerusalem, and it was really cool. It was really old and historic, so you could definitely tell by all the architecture. And it was insane, just like, it was something I would never fathom of seeing, ever. Like, I read about it in the Bible. I go to a religious church, so I'm basically in a class that I'm like learning about where I was almost every day. And so, like, knowing where I was and what I'm doing and where, like, the experience that I'm gaining from it was a pretty big deal for me. It helped me realize a couple of things. I saw like how other people reacted to religion and things, and it like opened my eyes. So that was pretty cool. I went inside of this one building inside of Jerusalem, and there was a Orthodox side, a Greek Orthodox side, and a Catholic side. And you could definitely tell how old they were by the paintings and like the stone that was being used to build the building, I guess. And it was really old. They had a their way of getting water out of the city was literally just a little path throughout the whole city that just followed down. It was like a 2-inch a 2-inch divot into the ground that just literally went all throughout the city. And that was pretty cool to me because, like, that was that's pretty smart to be built, like, so long ago. And so it was just cool watching people who actually live there, like locals, going in and doing what they do every day. And then watching other people from other countries react to what everyone else sees. And, like, I could say that it's one of the most famous places in the world because everyone knows about Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's where is literally the Holy Land. Like, that is where Jesus was. Or that's what some people believe and stuff. But, yeah, it was pretty breathtaking.
Yeah, no, man, that's awesome. I think, as you know, we both go to a Christian school, and so we learn about Jerusalem, we learn about Israel. It's insane for you to be able to experience that, and not only experience that, but, like, experience it by playing lacrosse. And I think it's cool to see where our sport is going, that they talked about a lot. This was one of the first tournaments that wasn't hosted in Australia, the United States, Europe, but, you know, like, in Canada or in, like, Manchester.
Yeah.
It was cool to see it in Jerusalem. And I think it was awesome to see that the Israel team, like, the host team, they played really well. And I think that was good for the sport, because if we're able to expand it into another country, you see Scott Ratliff, you see a lot of players through, like, String King and through partners with all these different brands go over into China and into Japan and areas like this. And the teams look good. The players look like they have a lot of skill. So if we could ever get a tournament out there, and have the host country play really well, I think that bodes well for the sport. You know what I mean? I think it'd be a detriment if we had a host country host it and they played really poorly, because you saw, like, Israel played the first game, like every host country, and, like, when you're doing the Olympics or the World Cup, the host country plays the first game, and they played really well and they played in a big stadium. And it would have been really bad look if they would have gotten, like, smacked, or if they would have gotten beat really bad. So I think it's just cool to see that it was in Israel, and then Israel plays the first game and they beat, I think they played Jamaica. I think that was the first game. Israel beats Jamaica in a big stadium, crowds there. And I think it's a positive direction. It's a positive step for our sport. And did you get to, like, what was your interaction like? I know a lot of people, when they went on the tours, they had hosts, they had guides, and they went with other teams. Like, kind of talk about that interaction, not on the field necessarily. Talk about what it was like to just be around players from different teams, especially when you're getting exposed to so many different things. Like, you're in another country, first of all, and then you're hearing a bunch of different languages, and you're meeting people from other countries who are also traveling and playing lacrosse. So, like, your senses must have been on, like, overload. You're like, I don't know what's... It almost sounds kind of stressful, to be honest. So, like, just kind of talk about your interaction. What was it like talking with players from other teams? And what was it like... No, I just go with what was it like meeting players from other countries and your interactions with teams and stuff like that?
Meeting players from other countries was actually really cool because everyone supported everybody. Because, like, everyone's just trying to grow the game around the world. So no matter, like, what team you were playing for, everyone supported you. It was pretty awesome, like, walking around Jerusalem with certain teams. Like, my team went with Wales, Norway, Australia, and USA. And just walking around with those guys, like, no one really talked at all, but, like, walking around with them, it was, like, crazy because, like, you could be walking around, like, Paul Rabel, and you'd be walking around with one of the greats in, like, in a historic, like, landmark. And you would, like, never... I mean, people go and watch him play, but you wouldn't, like, think that you're at the same tournament playing the same game that he's playing. You know what I mean? Like, and we walked around with Canada, and we actually practiced on the same field as Canada one day, and it was just a cool experience, like, walking around and seeing all the players that I watch on TV on, like, during the season. Like, Tahoka, I literally walked by him. I walked by Lyle Thompson and all, and Paul Rabil and Rob Pinnell and Trevor Baptiste and all of them. And that was pretty crazy because like I know that they're all like super good, and being at the same tournament as they are was just like, wow, that's pretty, like, that's an accomplishment to me. Mm-hmm. Like, that's pretty crazy. Even though we're not, like, not the same, like, level, but, like, because they were all at the top of the tournament and everything. But still, like, that's pretty crazy that they are exactly where I am for the same thing. Like, just trying to grow the game and get it out there to other countries so that they can start growing the game in their country. And that's all the lacrosse community really wants, is to grow the game around the world, pretty much. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting. You talked about not that you were necessarily on their level, but I think you were, because it's different than, you know, I go to the national championships every year, and, you know, you see Paul Rabil, and you see Rob Pinnell, and you see the guys from the lacrosse network there, but we're, by no means are we peers. Like, I'm a fan. I'm looking up to them. Like, there's something that I strive to be like, you know what I mean? But with you, like, if you were to go up and to, like, Rob or Paul or anything like that and be like, hey, I'm from Team Hungary, like, I want to, like, can you help me, like, with this? Like, can you maybe, I'm dodging down the alley and, like, I want to learn how to, like, dodge with my head up. I'm sure they'd see you as a peer and somebody who wants to get better rather than a fan coming up to ask them for their autograph, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think, like, I don't want you to minimize that. I think it's cool that you were literally their peer. You were a competition, but you were Paul Rabil's competition. You were Rob Pinnell's competition.
Yeah.
If you guys would have been, like, undefeated for, like, 16 games or something, you would have eventually played them. So that's just cool to think about, that you weren't – I mean, we've all played summer tournaments, and we've had cool coaches there, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You might see, like, one of the Tierneys walking around or one of the Concannons walking around. But, like, they're watching you, and you know you're just not on the same level. But when you're wearing, like, I play for Team Hungary, and then Paul Rabil's wearing I play for Team USA, you're, like, peers. You're together. You know what I mean? You're both international lacrosse players, and that's just cool to think about for me. What is, I think, I lost my question. I had such a good one trying to explain that to you. We're going to try to get it back here. I want you to kind of go into what your living situation was like. The United States team released vlogs through U.S. Lacrosse, and so we were all watching that, and we got a tour of, like, where they were living, and they call it, like, kibbutz or kabools or something like that. It was a weird Israeli word. Was it, like, the same for you guys? Were you treated differently because you were, like, a lower-tier team? And just kind of go into the food, how you were living, like, transportation, kind of you're laughing, so I'm excited to hear what you got for this.
All right, so we got set up at this hotel called the King Koresh, and so we started making jokes later on in the week once we got out of there, but it was way different. We could just say it was way, way different than Team USA's hotel. it wasn't something I would say, like, somebody would, like, volunteer to go there. The food was really weird while we were eating there because it's all kosher, so you can't eat, like, certain things that you can eat in the U.S.
What's kosher?
Kosher is, like, they can only eat certain foods that go together, like how it is in the Bible. Like, they can't eat certain things together. I'm pretty sure, like, one of the things is you can't drink milk and eat meat or a certain type of meat at the same,
like,
it's like
my two favorite things.
Yeah, I know. But then we got the shuttles to bring us to the games and everything were hectic. One of them was pretty late this one time, and then they started pulling up at this whole different spot that wasn't even in front of our hotel. So then we got moved into an Airbnb later on in the tournament, and that was a big turnaround for us because that's when we started winning. Then once that happened, the Airbnb was actually really, really nice. It was really nice. I would definitely try to stay there instead of the King Koresh. That was so bad. But it wasn't horrible because you're in Israel doing what you love. So it wasn't bad. But at the same time, like, it was crazy because the King Koresh is somewhere you do not want to be. But the Airbnb was a turnaround for our team because we did start winning. But they also, like, the Airbnb had a, it had, like, a game room all the way down. It was three stories, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It had a game room all the way in the bottom. It had, like, a pool on, outside on the porch. It had a, or the patio. And it had a hot tub all the way on the top floor. And so, like, we were all really excited when we got out of the King Koresh.
Yeah.
For sure. Because that was just... No, that was just no.
What was wrong with it? Tell us, what was kind of like, it was it a living space thing? Were you guys all bundled together? Were there like holes in the wall? Like, come on, you're leaving us hanging here.
All right, so first they tried to set us up in two different buildings. Like, they tried to split our team up into two different buildings. Then some certain rooms smelled really bad. Like, and other rooms, like, didn't have Wi-Fi. Like, you couldn't have Wi-Fi or connect to it.
Yeah.
Then, other rooms were like, this one kid on my team literally was sleeping on a coffee table with a mattress on it, bro.
No way.
Yeah, it was really bad. It was so bad. We did not believe him until he like took a picture and then showed all of us on the picture. And we were like, are you serious? Like, that's actually like here. And we all go into the room and we see him. We're like, what the heck? And then the rooms were just really bad. Well, yeah, it's not all of them, but most of them were pretty bad. Like, we did have a kid sleeping on a coffee table, so we did have to leave. Like, that wasn't the best living situation for the 2 weeks that we were there for. So then, what's it called? We had this squeegee, or whatever it's called, when the water gets all on the tile. I'm pretty sure it's squeegee. We had to squeegee the water from our showers back down into the drain.
Stop.
I'm being so serious. And then, that was bad, first off. Some people couldn't even fit in the shower because of how small it was. And then, some people on our team were actually pretty tall, and they had a duck. Like, they said they had a duck to get their head under the shower. The shower head, but their food was actually pretty good, but that was about it. The location that the King Koresh was in, though, was pretty cool because we could literally walk straight to the beach, and that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
It was in a good location. Their rooms just were
not the best.
Not the best.
What was it like? Getting acclimated to the time difference. How many days? Kind of take us through your travel schedule a little bit. Because, I mean, you're from North Carolina, so you had to meet up with the team somewhere. I'm assuming you didn't all meet up in Israel. You must have met somewhere else. So kind of go through your travel all the way up from North Carolina to getting back to North Carolina, like 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later, whatever it was. And in that, kind of talk about the jet lag and what it was like. I don't know when you got there, if you got there like a week before game started, if you got there a day before game started. So like if you were playing lacrosse while you were super tired, or if you were staying awake till like 5 a.m. because you couldn't get to sleep. Kind of talk about the struggles of being a lacrosse player and having to perform at your best, but struggling with things like time zone changes and like a change in diet and stuff like that.
I think we were 7 hours ahead of the U.S. while we were in Israel. So I was up pretty much all night just on my phone, like looking at things, what's happening at home. And it was pretty funny because at the same time, I know like everyone was looking at their phone, like wondering what's going on in Israel to like see what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole time I would just be up pretty much throughout the night. I wouldn't really be tired the next day because I'd be used to the U.S. schedule.
Mm-hmm.
I'd just take like small naps here and there, especially during like right before a big game. We would all take like a nap in the locker room. And we would all just, not all of us, but like a few of us would just be knocked out on the floor. And then the time difference was not that bad, actually, like for me at least. But when we got back, it was pretty bad. I was really just sleeping pretty much the whole time. Like, I could not, because we just got back. So I just lost, I guess, 7 hours instead of gaining it the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I pretty much slept, like, the whole first day back in the U.S. But then after that, I was pretty, like, I got used to it. I was pretty excited about coming back and telling everyone the, like, story. So the time difference was weird because that was like the furthest I've ever been from home.
Mm-hmm.
And but it was pretty easy to get used to because it was literally just going there was gaining it. But I guess if it was like losing it, losing the 7 hours while being there, that would have been really bad because I would not have been used to like trying to gain my 7 hours back. But it worked out pretty good. The schedule or whatever, the time schedule worked out pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. So was there any funny travel stories that you had for us? Any mishaps with bags? Was somebody missing a stick? Anything like that? I know I've never been on a plane in my life before, so I don't know, but I know people's bags get mixed up all the time. It looks like you got one. It looks like you got one. Oh, yeah.
My buddy Mark, he actually lost his bag in Vancouver. And he was literally practicing with pads that he's never played before. He was literally running and practicing in tennis shoes for like a week straight. And then once they sent his bag finally to our hotel, it wasn't even at our Airbnb because that was when we switched hotels. It was at the King Koresh. They had to go get the bag from the King Koresh. And then he finally got all of his stuff and he started playing. But at first he was just rocking the Hungry helmet and that was about it. Like, and I think the gloves and that was it. He had to wear every like extra pads that everyone else brought because like his airline like didn't send the bag. He lost the bag, and that was really bad. I felt really bad for him. We all didn't like. You would think someone would, like. Give people crap for like running, but we all did not give him crap at all because we all felt bad that he was running in like tennis shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So his feet were getting so many blisters.
Yeah,
it was so bad. He showed us at the end of like the whole tournament and it looked like his toe was falling off. It was so bad. And I just that was it though for everybody losing their bag. I'm so happy that mine did not get lost because that would have sucked.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been bad.
Now we talk about how I mean, both of us are kind of pretty young, you more so because you're only a sophomore in college now. Did you go with any family at all? Did you go with, like, any friends that you knew that played for Team Hungry? Like, what was that like? You talked about how originally the plan was for you not to play, and then all of a sudden, like, your parents said you could. So did like, your mom, did your dad go with you? Did anybody go with you at all, or were you just kind of like, hey, I'm going to Israel and playing with Team Hungry? Like, what was that kind of like? What was your support system in that?
My parents did want to go, like, really, really bad, especially my dad and my mom. But, like, I went there by myself. But I knew that they were watching me and, like, asking me about it. And they asked me to, like, post things on, like, Facebook because they're parents and stuff.
Yeah.
But I'll be posting it on Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat. I literally saved everything I posted on Snapchat on my story.
Mm-hmm.
So I have like this huge story from like me being in Israel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would get text messages from them. I would tell them like what I was doing and send them pictures.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't come, but at the same time, it was almost like they were there because I was pretty much talking to them every day.
Yeah.
And I knew that they were watching me. They were just like there from afar, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a different experience, though, being somewhere like that far away by myself. It, like, helped me grow as a person. Because, like, a lot of people usually, like, go certain places, like, far, far away with their families and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, going there, like, I guess helped me, like, start becoming an adult even though I'm, like, 18 and, like,
mm-hmm.
or 19 now. But, like, I'm saying, like, you know what I mean?
By, mm-hmm.
like, people stop doing things with their parents at 18 because like that's when they start becoming adults and everything.
Yeah,
so it was like the first big step I did something by myself.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. But yeah, I knew my whole family, even my cousins and like my aunts in the U.S. they were all watching. They all were like bragging about me, like telling their friends,
yeah.
like my cousin plays for Team Hungry, and they're like, no way. And like they start showing them the stream or like the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Like my actually my little cousin Drew Wheeler was playing at Bryan Nationals.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and he was playing, and his mom was watching the games while watching me play on the phone, And she was like, that's my nephew playing right there. And that was pretty funny. That was my Aunt Casey. And Uncle Brad was watching me play too. He was doing something else with a different tournament with his other son, Logan Wheeler. And that was funny too because he was doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And then my brother, Max, and my sister, Mia, were both watching like all they could with my mom. And my dad was just watching by himself on his phone. And it was just funny because, like, they would screenshot the stream and, like, send it to me and say, hey, I just saw what you did. And, like, after the game, I'll have, like, 50 text messages like, mm-hmm. hey, I saw that. Like, they'll know exactly, like, what I was thinking during that because they've all played with me before. Like, we all play together as a family. And that was just pretty cool knowing that they were all watching. Just, mm-hmm. like... Like I said before, like, knowing every little thing I did, like, my whole family and, like, the whole world basically saw it.
Mm-hmm.
The whole lacrosse community. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. No, it sounds like you've got a good support system in your life, which kind of brings me to, we're going to be wrapping up here pretty soon. I've got, like, a question or two left. But speaking of support systems, I wanted to kind of have you shout out some people because this, the mentioning of you being on a podcast got a lot of love over there on Twitter from people down in North Carolina, like your old, you know, I always struggle to pronounce this Fuque Varina.
That's Fuque Varina.
So like, I'm sure like we got a ton of mentions and we got a ton of replies saying, we can't wait to listen to this. It sounds like maybe even your coaches are going to like have like old teammates and stuff listen to it.
Yeah.
Like some family members, some of our old teammates said they were going to listen to it. So, like, is there anything you kind of want to say to people who may be listening, you know, like, your roots down in North Carolina, some shout-outs? Just kind of talk to your support system a little bit, you know, maybe give a shout-out for... Because we got like, 15 followers off of you, and they're all from North Carolina.
Awesome.
So, I know there's people listening here that would love a shout-out. So, if you got, you know, like, say, hey, what's up, boys, to the FVHS... Men's Lax, because I know they can't wait to hear this. Or the Goblins, is that your travel team?
Yeah, that's my travel team.
Yeah, man, just talk to them for a minute or two.
I like to shout out my everyone in Fuque, basically. Thank you for listening and thank you for supporting me through this whole like big experience going to the World Games and playing there and watching me, and thank you for helping me become, like, the person that I am through our Fuque programs. Thank you, Mom and Dad, for supporting me for, I think, 8 years now, 8 years of playing lacrosse. Thank you, Uncle Brad, for basically teaching me everything I know in lacrosse. You helped me start out. You got me a stick when I was really young. I remember playing catch with you and Logan and Drew and Max all in the front yard. And thank you, Dad, for playing catch with me whenever you wanted to. I knew you were a hockey player, but that was awesome that you tried to, like, help me and Max grow. Shout out to the Goblins. Everybody down in Fuque, stay hashtag uncommon.
Oh, my God. Oh, I saw that.
Fuque High School or Fuque Varina High School. I know that the Orange Storm has risen. I hope you guys do good this year. I'll be watching the games. I'll either come down for a lot of the games or I'll be asking my mom to either like stream them or I'll just like listen to the score or get the score texted to me. But good luck this year, especially to my cousin Logan, my cousin Drew, and my brother Max. I know you guys are going to do really good this year. You're all becoming really, really good lacrosse players. And do good in school, though, too.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for all the support and all the love. I love you guys. Thank you.
All right, one more question before we leave. You've got everyone hook, line, and sinker now. Now they're all feeling good and emotional. What's been your biggest takeaway from this experience? What's the thing you're going to look back most? You're going to look back on most, you know, when you're old and washed up and not playing lacrosse anymore. Like I'm getting to that age pretty soon here. When when you're looking down the road, what have you learned through this process? Whether it's traveling alone and realizing you're more independent, whether it's playing at a higher level and realizing you can compete, whether it's just realizing that finding good support systems are important. What's been your biggest takeaway from the 2018 World Lacrosse Championships in Israel?
The biggest takeaway for me, I would say, is this was a pretty big like event and experience to be a part of. So, and like every team you're a part of, I guess, is something bigger than yourself. And like once you realize that it's bigger than yourself and you're a part of a team and you try to be like a part of a team, a good teammate and everything, that betters you as a person. I know it bettered me as a person being a part of this team. It definitely showed me that like every team in the past has helped me to get to the national Hungarian team.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I said, once you realize that like the teams that you're on, no matter how big or how small, like once you realize that it's like bigger than yourself, like it will change like your perspective and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You try to be everyone's friend on your team. Once you realize that, like you try to have their back no matter what happens on or off the field. You leave everything that happens on the field. Like once you get off, you should all be brothers and still like help each other out no matter what happens, no matter what's said or anything.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty much what my big takeaway was, to like realize that I should be there for everyone that was there for me. Even if I don't like them in the beginning or something, like mm-hmm. you should still be brothers and like figure it out. Cause mm-hmm. like you guys are a part of a team now, and that's mm-hmm. something way bigger than you can like mm-hmm. really imagine.
So the championships taught you about, you know, being a better teammate, finding unity and bonds, you know, with teams through the sport of lacrosse.
Yeah.
Right. Awesome. Well, Alex Sieber, Hungarian national team, sophomore at Ohio Valley University. Thank you for coming on. We're going to see you in the 2022 World Games in Canada.
Hopefully, yes. Hopefully, yes.
All right. Say something in Hungarian.
Sign
off. Say goodbye in Hungarian.
Ciao. Sebus. Said it like ciao. Thank you for having me, Austin. Go Scots. Go Scots.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. This has been Everything Lacrosse with our man, Alex Sieber. Once again, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. Follow us on all of our social media platforms. Thank you all again for being the best fans out there. And we will see you next time.